The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. Us, or welcome us back to you, whichever way it works. Yay! This is Brent and Lydia talk Starman. For the last 2 weeks, we've been, recording episodes, really. But you've been listening to the Willow commentary. Hope you enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're back to talk Starman. This is I guess episode 19, where we talk about issue 18. Mm-hmm. And as always, we're brought to you by Comics League International. Yay! How you doing, Lydia?
Good. I'm so sleepy, though. I say this so often. I'm always sleepy, but it's the weather. It's the weather in Japan. It's like, it's perfect to sleep in.
Yes, it's that cool without being cold.
Yeah.
And it's overcast, so even though it's right now to kind of show you behind the curtain, it's 3 p.m. as we record this. It's already got that, like, the sun's about to go away feeling to it.
Yeah. But you know what? Doesn't mean we aren't ready to talk about Starman.
I'm totally ready.
Okay. All right, so today we have Times Past Starman. Yes. First, is this pronounced Joust?
Joust.
Yeah. Joust.
And I guess I go first with the with our history lesson thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I gotta say, I'm sure, April 96, very fantastic, very wonderful. I could only find one thing that made me go, oh wow, that happened. And that was that the would you call this a musical? Would you call it a production? But Bring in da Noise, Bring in da Funk opened at the Ambassador Theater in New York City. And this this tap show, dance show, featured choreography by Savion Glover.
Okay.
And is one of the shows that kind of, helped, I think. I mean, I'm not sure if we could say Savion Glover is a household name. But it definitely kind of, like, reintroduced the idea of, like, wait a minute, tap can be very, very cool to the people.
I see.
I know this is where I first kind of heard of Savion Glover.
I have never heard of
really?
Yeah, I'm actually Googling it right now and, like, looking at the thing. if we play it and the thing gets recorded.
We heard it. Oh, no.
Let's play a little bit. I mean, why not, right, for the viewers?
Announced he is investigating Hang on, Kathy just gonna... Gifford for allegedly yeah. hiring the cat. Ladies and gentlemen, bring in the noise. Bring in the funk.
Don't sue us, Broadway, or whoever. Oh, okay, so it's like... It's like percussion.
Yeah.
Okay. And then tap. Oh, okay. Yeah.
There you go.
I get it.
There you go.
Oh.
So it was very cool. And that's really all I got for 96, April 96.
But I can see how it was, like, revolutionary.
It was just neat. And you gotta remember, kids, as I put on my old fogey hat, this was before the internets. Was there, but before, you couldn't just hop on YouTube and say, I want to see, like, a thing from this show yet to kind of wait for like a PBS feature or maybe Savion Glover would do things around. And so kind of there was a bit more buzz and bubbling. What? Bring into noise? Bring into funk? That sounds ridiculous. What? Wow, that's actually pretty cool.
Yes, yes. I agree. You know, I'm totally in agreement with what you said, because recently I just went online on YouTube to find shows that I used to watch before I went to kindergarten.
Yeah.
And it just brought back so many memories, because that was like the golden age of TV. It was like you could not consume media if it wasn't on TV, you know, moving pictures. I mean, apart from going to the theater or I mean the cinema, but TV was the thing, you know. There was no YouTube back in 1996. It was it's really amazing. So yes, thank you. It's very educational for me. Okay, all right, so I guess that's your one thing.
That's my one thing.
Okay, so with that, let's move on to the synopsis. So Starman 18, I said the title just now, but it's basically, you know, first joust between Starman and the Mist. And this, to me, was like, this was a Starman issue that was the origin story of. It was mainly about Ted Knight in his Starman days and his relationship with the Mist. Taught from the perspective of who I think is the Shade, because he wrote the journals, and that's what we see in the first page. You know, this guy writing at a shady desk. So, in this issue 18, there's a crime wave going on in Opal. And Ted is new to the Starman thing. This is like, I was like, whoa, okay, that's quite refreshing. So we learn about the Mist and how he belatedly came to realize he's a villain. So if you remember in the previous issues, they talked about how he earned a medal for his efforts in the war and stuff like that. So we see that he was expecting to be a good guy, I think, but he ended up being a bad guy, and he was like, oh, okay, I'm a bad guy, and that was quite interesting for me to watch. And then we also learn how the Mist actually spared Ted's life the first time they met, even though he had the chance to kill Ted. So that happens in this issue as well. And most importantly, we get huge hints as to why Nash / the New Mist killed the people she killed during the previous story arc, you know, the murder one, murder two, that one. So that was, you know, I went through this issue not really grasping all the threads, but once it came to this last part, I got, oh, okay. So we'll talk about that when we come to it. Yes. And I think this issue mainly seeks to tie up some loose ends and throw some light on this culture of the Mist's family. You know, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but this odd brand of villainy that I feel the Mist perpetuated in Nash. So that's my sort of synopsis. I couldn't really keep track of all the events. That's why it came out feeling like a review, but it was quite confusing for me as I went through it. Yeah, so I only managed to arrive at the major plot points at the end. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the interaction between the Mist and Ted was quite straightforward, but I couldn't keep track of all the names.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. So
should we start with the cover?
Okay. Cover.
Cover.
This is Ted. He's in a ridiculous costume that shows off his manly crotch.
Yes, it does. It's God bless it, but that manly crotch almost ever so slightly kind of looks like a pair of adult diapers.
I know, right? Green yep. diapers.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, it does. It does.
It looks a little too... And not in like the, like, oh, hey, is that oversized? But just, it looks oversized.
Yeah.
Like the whole, like, hips and, you know, it... Did you ever play with G.I. Joes?
No, but I think I owned a few hand-me-downs.
Like the old, like, the smaller ones?
The smaller ones, yeah.
You know how, like, the legs and, I guess, the whole, like, hip crotch area never quite touched?
Yes.
Something about this reminds me of those.
Oh, okay. Well, not that, you know, we are putting down Tony Harris's work or anything, but...
No.
Being frank, right?
It just...
But then again, comic book heroes, they tend to have this look. Who came up with it? Honestly, who came up with it? It's like, why? Who came up with this triangular, well, let's put their briefs on the outside kind of look?
Ooh, I've actually read this.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Not exactly why it became, like, very briefy, but I've read how the original superheroes, they were going... originally, they were going for more of, like, that kind of muscle man look. Like, so if you look at older Batman comics, old Superman comics, from, what, the 1920s and 1930s, their briefs were much more kind of like actual, not boxer shorts as in the underwear, but boxer shorts as in the shorts that boxers would wear.
Right, okay.
And so that kind of square thing was to give them that much more, like, kind of athletic, moving around, freedom of motion type look.
Right.
And then kind of as... I think I've read that as that fashion kind of died away, and they became almost like bathing suit-esque, it kind of slowly descended... into, like, you'd almost say, just, hey, I'm wearing multi, like, different colored briefs over my tights, which doesn't look as, you know, strongman-ish as the kind of tinier boxer shorts.
I see. Wow, the evolution of comic book fashion
is certainly what I've heard, you know, but maybe I'm wrong. You never know. But there you go.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, so we've talked about how Ted is, you know, wearing a funny costume, but the mist has no costume at all.
Nah. I'll say at first it also kind of bothered me that the mist was more yellow. But then I kind of got it, that yellow was the reflection of the cosmic rod. And then when I was like, oh, right, because the light source and that's there, I really liked it, kind of as even a symbol that Ted's power was taking over the mist in a way.
I didn't notice that it was yellow because of the light, too. Mm-hmm. Huh, okay. I'm trying to figure out where they are. Oh, the train tracks. Okay. Mm-hmm. The background is like train tracks because of what happened in the story, right?
Yeah.
Detail, though.
Yeah, it's really, you know, like you said, other than that one little detail, it's a very skillfully done cover, and I kind of like how it has that almost throwback to like a pulp era style, like Man of Action type feeling.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's also not... It doesn't grab me the same way as some of the other covers have done.
You know, we've talked about how some covers are like scenes in the comics. Some are like, you know, these kind of like dreamed up, fictional collages and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
This one is a scene, like a scene from the book.
Definitely.
That wasn't really shown in the comic, but yeah. Okay,
moving on.
Yes. Wait, there's another name in the cover, on the cover. James Robinson and John
Watkiss.
Is he new?
Yes, because in this issue, that is our artist, because, you know, I don't think Tony Harris does art for any of the Times Past
issues.
So this is kind of a guest penciler and inker. So all the pencils and inks in this were done by John Watkiss.
Okay. I see. We'll come to the creators in a bit. And now we open the page. Yes.
as the mist writes. I was just gonna go there, yeah.
I like the font. Like, immediately you know that this takes place in a more mysterious time because of that slanting font.
Yes.
Mm. So,
and that it also is our clue that this is a something that the mist wrote in his journal and not just our omniscient narrator.
Yes. So it talks about Opal in the past, right?
Yeah.
It gives us a bit of background on what was the... Well, was it the political situation? No. It was more of like the pop culture situation.
Yeah. Kind of, you know, about the golden age of heroes with, you know, the older Flash. Yeah.
There are a lot of like references that I don't catch in this as well because, you know, I'm not familiar with the DC universe.
Yeah.
So.
I think it's interesting that on this that we get the season and the kind of meaning of it is that this is probably a pre-World War II era. But I think it's interesting that we're not actually given like a year for it.
All right, we are given the years around it, but
yeah,
I see. All right, I see. Yeah, we're not told explicitly. I like that. I like that. That's a good, you know, writing device. Mm-hmm. Keep your. It's always important to keep your readers in the dark about certain things. Mm-hmm. Never reveal it to them. So mystery is very important.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I always wonder when I see stuff like that. How much of it is also because you never quite know when timelines will be played with?
Yeah. You never know.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Yeah. So, like if they decide to, DC doesn't do this as much, but, you know, Marvel especially is known for their sliding timeline. And what that kind of means is, do you know the character The Punisher?
No, unfortunately.
Okay, so there's a Marvel comic book character that, his original origin, tied in with Vietnam.
Okay.
You know, in the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And... Every couple of decades, I guess, since he was created, they kind of tie in his origin or his background with a slightly later war. Huzzah for America having so many to choose from. But, you know, okay. I mean, that's kind of the example of the sliding timeline of here's a detail that's kind of important to this character's backstory.
Mm.
But if we keep it fixed, then, you know, it'll be like, eventually it'll be a 70-year-old man. We're like, I'm going to go fighting. So they just, in the background, just kind of slide those details up, kind of like a little magician doing a trick, and right. just kind of letting people know, like, that's not so important anymore. Just go with it.
Yeah. Suspend your belief.
Yeah. And kind of when I read this, I always kind of wonder, since it's not given a fixed year, but details around it, is this kind of another thing where of like, well, if we don't put the year, then right now it's dating it as pre-World War II, but, you know, maybe in a generation it can be like, it was obviously after World War II, yeah. Or maybe I'm just overthinking it.
I see, but yeah, for as far as my very uneducated eye can see.
Oh, pish posh.
I can accept, you know, what's going on in this universe. So I think that's a good direction.
Yeah.
Right. So do we flip the page?
Yeah. Yeah. To that nice little double page spread.
Yes.
And we learn that First Joust is a tale of times past brought to us by James Robinson, writer, John Watkiss, artist, Gregory Wright, colorist, Oakley and NJQ? Is that a Q there? Looks like a Q. Are our letterers. Archie Goodwin is our editor, and Chuck Kim, our assistant editor. What are your thoughts on this page?
I have no idea. I don't know. There's so much. First of all, they're the yellow balls. I had no idea what the yellow balls were. and then the cats.
Yeah.
Okay. I get it. Like, why they are musicians? I think it was like a function that had some sort of entertainment, you know, important people congregating and stuff like that. But not that it wasn't a cool, you know, setup for the page, but that was just so many. I think it's just, you know, the story. It's just so removed from what I've been reading up till now, you know. And, you know, I'm a very new comic book reader, and then I get introduced to Jack, and then Starman, and then his struggles, and then bam, we have a Ted, who's new on the block. Yeah, so still digesting a lot of things. Yeah, but so, you know, very cool. Detail, especially the harp. I think that's a harp. I'm not sure. Yeah, so that's what I had to say. It's chaos, I think,
which is
a good. It made me confused, and I think that's a good thing. Okay, how about you?
I liked it. You know, it's. I think it does some things very well and some things, you know, maybe a little less well. And I'm trying to decide which those are, because they keep on going back. Like, you know, at certain times I kind of like how with everything, you know, it's, for a double page, everything is very heavy and loaded on the right side of the two pages. And so my eyes just keep being drawn over there, especially to Starman and... Is that Red Bailey? I think it's supposed to be. mm-hmm. right there in the middle. Like, I just keep looking at them. Mm. And I kind of like that, but at the same time, the fact that it is so heavy and almost so hard to look at anything else does kind of make me, you know, wonder about the page in and of itself. Because, like you said, there's a lot of chaos and a lot of interesting little details. Mm. But, you know, I'm not... Yeah, I guess nothing is especially eye-catching outside of the big goofy guy in the red outfit. Mm.
So yeah, I got him. It's all over the place in a way. Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Next page.
Well, I guess before we move on, we just gotta. Mm-hmm. Take a moment and just kind of point out that we do get the first little bit of, like, most of the victims are just sleeping, except those that drank.
Right.
We get that first little nugget right there.
Yes. I did not catch it until a lot later. I just like skimmed over it because, you know, I was quite confused throughout the entire thing.
Okay. Well,
when
I read it, I'll admit that, like, I caught it, but I didn't think there would be necessarily a plot reason, and more of a, oh, I guess his knockout gas isn't perfect. Doop a doop a doop.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Who's that? What about him? The next page is this ugly guy.
Yeah. Well, this is one of those moments where not to talk solely about the art, but when I saw his pocket-sized gas mask, I kind of thought, like, you know, like, I wish it had looked a bit more retro of the era, I guess is what I'm thinking about. Because, I mean, that's, you know, it's really tiny, that gas mask. That's all.
Okay, yeah. I understand what you're getting at. Mm. Yeah. Oh. Okay. So over here with gas mask guy, we learned that the mist sounds like an honorable criminal, you know, because gas mask guy was killed by the mist, and because he, gas mask guy, tried to take advantage of one of the women while she was passed out.
Yeah.
But... They aren't sure of the mist's true intentions at this point, because even though he did that, he, like, you know, stood up for the lady's justice, whatever you call it. He still killed a lot of people.
Yeah, 11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
what's your take on that, I guess, division point?
I don't know, you know, it's whenever people bring up things like that, honorable criminals versus real criminals, it's such a fine line sometimes. I think because we know what happens at the end of the story, I think it's really what choice you make eventually. Is this what you're asking?
I think so. Or
okay.
Yeah. Just the idea of, like, kind of Starman does make that point of, so he's an honorable criminal, because he did try and protect a woman's virtue. Is that how
virtue?
We put it?
Yes.
Whereas the Captain Bailey. That's it. Captain Bailey was like, you know, you can think that way, or you could notice he killed a lot of people.
Mm. It's really because at the end of it, we know that the Miz sort of became a full-blown villain.
Yeah.
And he made that choice, you know. Remember that bit where Nash was in the home of that guy who needed care and she killed the nurse?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. They make the choice to not do the right thing, mm-hmm. even though they have that, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I know I shouldn't kill you, but yeah. I'm gonna kill you. Mm. You know, that's the difference, I guess. The division point is really what you choose eventually.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. That's heavy.
Yeah. To change things right around, I like the fact that in a way, here is Bailey, in a way, you know, saying the same words that we saw from, was it Commissioner Wu from issue about, you know, the kind of like, got to go with the times, got to be modern.
Mm.
And I like that that's both a call back and a call forward at the same time.
Yeah, you know, work with the heroes, stand on, take sides, basically, I think. I think it doesn't do to be on the fence, no matter, you know, what situation, be it this fictional one, or when we are at work, or, you know, I think sometimes you have to take sides. Being a neutral party is... It's not like being a neutral party means you don't concern yourself with what's going on. You know, not just personal issues that crop up at work, but even these big world issues that are happening around us, you know, when it comes to like world hunger and girls' education and things like that, and to concern yourself with it, I think it's something that's very important. These are the things that I think in a way fiction is trying to show us, to create this parallel for our world, to illustrate injustice in a very plain form, and it helps us think about what the injustices are in our, you know, real world, and how we should work around our feelings towards them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that's heavy to me.
Yeah. Well, but you know, anytime we want to escape into the fictional world, we have Starman.
Exactly.
Okay.
Next page?
Yes.
And this please.
There's very little dialogue in this.
Yeah.
But I quite liked it. I don't know about you.
I did too. I really liked the coloring of it.
I don't immediately look at the art. It's always the words that strike me first. When characters are connected, you know, by what they say. So over here, Bailey asks Ted if he's new to Opal, and he's like, no, born and raised, yes. And Bailey calls Ted brother, right?
Yeah.
So it's when you establish relationships between characters like that, you know, because I write as well, and when you get to do that, it's like, You're feeding the the readers not just the plot, but it's character development, and that's so important. Characters just keep you in the story, I think.
I think so too, and having that little moment of Bailey kind of putting that extra importance on the fact that you're from Opal and you're here to help Opal, then that just automatically gets Starman some extra points.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah.
Also, you know, I gotta say, I only just now, as we're talking about this, put it together that the Cat Club sign is likely for the place they just
came out of.
Just now saw it and was like, oh, because all the cats, that explains it.
Okay.
Only just now.
Yeah, thanks for telling me. I completely missed it. I would have completely missed it if you didn't say anything about it. I want, sometimes when I read Starman, I'm looking out for pirates because of, you know, what you said about Tony Harris. But over here, I know that Tony Harris isn't the artist for this one. Is he isn't the artist for the inside of the comic, right?
Yeah, no.
So perhaps cats are
a thing for John Watkins.
Yeah,
could be. I've heard of.
I don't know.
I've heard of similar type things.
Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah.
Next page.
Okay, yellow page.
Yellow page.
Lovelace has this color. Mm. Yeah, right. It's quite congruent throughout the series.
I almost wish it were that same kind of sickly green that we've gotten with the mist so many times before. I can deal with urine yellow. I can
deal with it. But you miss vomit green.
I do. Yeah.
No, it's phlegm, right?
It's phlegm green. Exactly. I miss the phlegm green.
Oh no, okay. Okay, so over here we find that the mist is with his henchmen. Where he's recruited them from, I don't know.
Yeah, just generic bad guys. I like that in a way. This page, it's, you know, I first want to describe it as the mist wrestling with his thoughts, but he doesn't really seem to be wrestling with them so much as it is of him like kind of putting the puzzle together of who he is. He's like, well, I thought I was, you know, this type of person. I thought I was a scientist, and I thought I was maybe a war hero, but I guess at the end of the day, nope, I'm a villain. I rob people and I do horrible things, and I'm really not a nice guy.
It's a rather unconventional way to arrive at such a conclusion, because I think most people will have this epiphany like, oh no, I'm a villain, or they're just like all out, I'm a villain. But you know, for him it was just a very like, oh, okay, all right, yeah. It's very natural, just and I think that's quite unique. You know, don't get a lot of villains who come into existence like that.
I mean, especially when they, you know, they always say that no villain thinks they're the villain. And I find it very natural for the way this character is presented to be like, yeah, no, putting everything together and I'm the bad guy.
Okay. Next page.
Next page, where he's doing bad things again.
And this time we see him in his mist form for the first time in the book. He looks like a little mini cyclone. Nice way to draw it, though. It looks like a croissant. When you think about it.
Quick, here comes butter and jam, man. Run!
A blue croissant with a head. Oh, I'm just cracking up on my
the
own.
The blue croissant.
That's a great name. I mean, you know, if you look at it with very childish eyes, that's how it goes. But no, he's a super villain.
This is serious stuff. Let's go back to talking about our comic book. Yeah. No time for laughter.
Okay. Yeah, nothing small, he says. Do the bad stuff good. You know, get all the money. And then, again, we have those tiny small gas, those tiny gas masks.
Yeah, yeah. And this is also one of those moments where I caught myself just kind of thinking, like, well, small isn't worth the time it takes, but is it really the time, or is it just the amount of space it takes up? And then I stopped myself and just said, you know what? Just go with it. Just go with it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? They are wearing gas masks, and that guy whom the mist killed, you know, gas mask man, he was wearing gas mask. He was wearing a gas mask too, so does that mean that he was the mist's henchman?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm slow.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So, let's turn the page.
Bam! Where Starman shows up and he's kicking people and he's blasting things. And you know what? His gas mask, larger than the mist's.
Yeah, yeah. My gas mask is larger than yours. Ooh.
So I think this is a good page for me to kind of just talk a little bit about. So I think the art here. While I like kind of the heavy ink quality on it, and like the you know, I do like it, especially kind of how Starman's hands are done.
Mm-hmm.
I also find there's just a little too much stiffness in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't quite know how to describe it, but nothing. It doesn't feel fluid. Like even though with the cape flapping, and Starman, you know, kicking the guy in the head while descending, it doesn't really feel in motion.
I get what you mean. I think if you notice the angles of the lines, there are a lot of right angle-ish angles, like the angle of the first panel.
Yeah.
Basically at Ted's crotch, it's a right angle. Ish thing, and then on the panel next to it, his arm, you know, his right arm, the point where his armpit is supposed to be, it's another right angle.
Yeah.
Right, and then, you know, his left elbow is slightly off angle, but still very, very sharp. And then that part where his you know, his knee, his right knee is also another sharp angle.
Yeah.
So never noticed things like that, but when you talk about the stiffness, that's what came to mind. And the other Teds, you know, in these two, all these pages, have some sort of right angle going on.
I did not notice that at all. There's something about it all that just, you know, it's one of those things where I think he's doing a good job, but it also looks, it doesn't have the same flow that we've had from the other artists.
Yeah. Do you think it's on purpose, though?
I don't.
Mm.
Like, if... It's really hard for me to say, like, because I think this stiffness, I don't think it elevates the art, really.
Mm.
I mean, maybe the right angles and everything is, but there's that hard to define quality that kind of makes me think that, as proficient as this guy is, he doesn't quite make the story flow and feel as lived in. And because of that, I can't help. I don't think it's an intentional thing.
I see. Okay.
But I can't really put it into words why. You know what I mean?
I do. Okay. All right. So, basically, these pages are about Ted coming in to kick people's ass.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, this page and the next page, even despite all my kind of going hemming and hawing about it, there is a plentiful amount of ass whooping.
Mm-hmm. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
All right. And then, do we move on to the page where the mist holds a woman at knife point?
Yes. Where do you think he stores the knife? Like, is it... is it in a pocket that also goes misty?
Yeah, maybe he puts it in the dough.
Not the blue croissant!
No, but, you know... I don't know. I'm just guessing. When he, when he reaches into himself, he might still feel his pockets and his bag or whatever.
I like it. I'm going
to himself, right? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You like it?
I like it.
Okay.
Feels his bag. Gotcha.
Yes. I mean, that's what... You know, I like writing fantasy, you know, what do you call it? Supernatural stuff as well. And it's fun to dream up rules
that,
you know, apply to your own technology. And when it's... and I like modern fantasy very much like what we encounter in Starman. So, you know, when... Even though the way people perceive you or the way you project yourself to people is like a mist, perhaps to yourself, to your own sentience, different. It's different. So I can accept that.
I like it. Pocket dimensions. There we go.
Oh, nice one. Nice one. Nice one. Okay. So over here, the mist, he basically... has this new it's like sometimes when, you know, encounters like that, it's like when lovers meet and fall in love.
This is their meet cute, you're saying?
Yes, this is like, you know, the love at first sight, but you know,
I saw him standing over her with his knife out.
Yes.
I'll never forget his final words: and remove your gas mask.
I mean, right? It's like, because, okay, can we also talk about the following page while we're at this?
Yeah.
Because it basically, this exchange ends with the mist sort of like challenging Ted, and he removes his gas mask, right? And then he collapses and the mist doesn't do anything to him. Right, and then, and that's you see the Shade talking about from then on they had this hatred, this you know, and they talked about the birth of their enmity, and that's why it's like love. To me.
See, I was really worried you were going to use the first bit of captioning on that page. The mist had him then. Wait a minute, I don't think that's the type of loving you're talking about.
No. It's like this, isn't it? For many of these superhero first meetings.
And you know what? I like how this is kind of a parallel, but not quite, to Nash and Jack's meeting, where she had the chance to kill him and didn't take it.
Right.
And you know, here we kind of get the same thing. It's not. It, like I said, I think it's a parallel, but it's not like an exact parallel. It's just the mist spares Starman. And that's kind of where they begin and end.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, aeroplane.
Oh, no worries.
Okay. You just now talked about the right angles. Do you feel that it's so much more pronounced in the scene where Ted is on the floor?
Yeah.
Like his leg that's under him, it's so straight. Yeah, and his elbow and his knee are all like bent at such an angle.
And even his head, it's not kind of lightly to the side. It's like, it's basically straight face down into the floor.
And the way the rod is perpendicular to his hand. Yeah, that's a very, very angular, very straight, except for the cloak.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
And it doesn't feel... Because everything is so much at that angle, it doesn't really feel like there's any depth to it.
Mm-hmm. That's like he was petrified before he fell.
Yeah. I also couldn't help but think, but for a man made of smoke and mist, the mist does seem to be holding himself very tightly.
Ah, that's true. He has very good posture.
Yes. Moving on?
Yes. Okay, and then we have Ted. At Bailey's? Is he at Bailey's?
Yeah, maybe Bailey's office.
Yeah. Okay, and then I didn't really... you know, completely understand what he was going to do from this point, but I know they're like planning something.
Yeah, well, you know, it's, I mean, to me this was just kind of Starman trying to just kind of explain how he does what he's doing. But it's, yeah, it's almost like they're using a little bit of a tell and not show. You know, with this page and the next page, they really want to, and I think they're half effective at it, to kind of make the case of Starman being more than just an action hero.
Right. To make him be like a detective, a sleuth.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like that. You know, that he didn't just punch people in the face, but he tried to figure things out. Yeah, and I think it, like I said, I think it mostly works. But again, I mean, admittedly, we only have a little over 20 pages of story to show that. But it kind of, it feels like there could have been a bit more of an effort to actually show him thinking, because there's a lot more effort showing him punch him in the face. piece.
Oh, that's true. Huh. Yeah, he only really thinks at that in that scene where he's in Billy's office.
Yeah. And even there, it's less of him thinking and more of him saying he had done some thinking.
Agreed.
Since I've been kind of negative about the art, I do want to point out that in the scene in the office, that lower left-hand panel where Ted's kind of sitting and kind of slouching and Red standing behind him. I really like that panel. The kind of almost, you know, you can feel the disappointment in himself coming off of Ted, and the way almost the like fatherliness of Red as he stands behind but not quite like knowing what to do. I think that was really, really well done, that moment.
Yeah. That broodiness. That's good. I see. As we move on to, you know, through all these issues, I think I kind of get, like, you know, what catches your attention, what catches my attention. That's interesting to find out as well.
Yeah. It's interesting when they overlap, or I think we've had lots of times in this issue where you've picked up on stuff that I completely glossed over, like the right angles and other things. It's nice.
Yeah. Okay. So what's next?
More punching?
Yes. You're talking about that page of the answers, is it?
Yeah. Page?
Okay.
Another airplane.
I live very close to an Air Force base. Do you call them Air Force bases? Because in Japan, they don't really have an Air Force. They have a division of the Self-Defense Forces that... I don't know. It's one of those things. Japan doesn't have an army.
Is it what do they call it? The SD? Well, that's off the subject. That's off the subject. SDAF, is it? Or... Ah, well.
Yes, SDF. Jietai. Yeah. Well, you know, law enforcement, just like what Starman does.
Yeah, I almost wanted to join up just to get my own cosmic rod.
Oh, but you know, law enforcement and the military are two different things, so it's actually different.
Exactly.
So, wait a minute. So, Starman, he's leaning towards law enforcement, right? So he's like more with the police. Okay.
Yes.
The superheroes and the police on one side. Then you have the military on the other side. I'm so hungry. Random.
See, now I'm wondering, like, how much do I just start rambling about, like, well, actually, there have been several times where the idea of, you know, government-sponsored superheroes have been run. In fact, Roy Thomas in his All-Star Squadron from the 80s used the idea of the blah, 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 blah.
Government spot. You mean, wait, that's actually one thing that I've been wondering about Starman. Where do they get their funds from, you know? Where does Ted make so much money to make his rods and stuff?
I'm not sure if they ever really answer that. I think one of the things I've heard, I can't remember if this is for Ted in specific, but a lot of the science heroes is they have various patents. In various fields, and there's lots of different heroes. For example, to go back to I think our last times past where they fought Ragdoll. I want to say two of those heroes there are also basically either CEO types, and just independently wealthy. One of the guys was a practicing physician. And the other guy, I think, was just a, you know, I'm a police scientist.
Mm-mm-mm.
So, but there you go.
I see.
Tangent! Yay!
Yes! Yay! Back to Starman!
Yeah, and, you know, he's, it is kind of him tracking down answers, but it's, it's kind of less thinking and more, I'm gonna punch you in the face! Tell me something I don't know or I'll punch you in the face! Which, you know, try using that in school on a test and tell the teacher you're thinking. And I don't think it's gonna work too well.
Yeah. But he does get his answers.
He does. But it's less detection, really, and more punching
extortion.
People in the face. Extortion, yes. The righteous extorter versus the blue croissant.
Oh, no. What's this issue turning into? Oops.
We're going loopy.
Okay, we're going to come back.
Okay.
Brooding Ted on the roof like a gargoyle.
Yeah, and then he's got it.
Mm. That's literally what he says. Mm. So he realizes something after talking to, what's his name? This guy, this Victor, is it Victor or, no. What's this guy's name? This redhead, this guy talking about Wilson May. See, I can't remember all the names. He's involved, right? He's one of the people who went down.
This is Mr. Dooney.
Mr. Dooney.
Mm.
Okay, so I think he was part of that group, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. What group? Ha ha.
We'll see.
Okay. So
he's got it, but first he's got to track down the mist on the mist's train, which is on the next page.
Mm.
And, yeah.
And he does it in fashion. He chases after the train with the power of his rod. And he flies, and the mist is actually, I was quite surprised with this, because the mist was actually like genuinely worried that when Ted showed up. It wasn't like, oh, I'm a supervillain, I have superpowers, I can get out of this, but he was like, no, get out of my way, and then he tried to
right,
so
what to do.
I was quite why was he like that? What could, was he? It wasn't as if he couldn't become the mist, you know, because he did become the mist at the end of the scene. So, that was strange for me.
Yeah, it is kind of, I guess he saw it as the only, he was only able to beat Starman last time by the help of kind of gas and trickery. But, you know, maybe he knows/believes that in a fair fight between them, he doesn't really stand a chance. And so that's why when he's basically, you know, he doesn't want to be judged by your kind. And jumps off.
Yeah, he jumps. He jumps off, and he's prepared to die. And that was strange for me. But he's prepared to die.
Mm-hmm.
So even if he turned into the mist, that misty croissant thing, he would have died if he plunged into the depths of the, not the ocean, but the flowing river, probably crashed on the rocks or something.
Mm.
So he would have died, even though. Like, he looks very incorporeal.
Yeah. I get this whole last mist segment does kind of feel a little awkward is the phrase I'm going to use. Because there's a lot of, like, oh, run and go and stop and no and wait and...
But it's kind of it's very contrived.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite contrived. It's very... doesn't seem to really fit with, you know, the... I want to say the legend of... Well, that's probably not the word. The science, what do you call it? I can't place my finger on the word that I'm looking for. Like, you know, the rules of what's been going on.
Yeah, because it's, well, if the mist is intangible when the mist... But does that mean he can't turn his hands and head intangible? Or he can, but... And rather than trying to fight in their first joust, he's more just like, oh no, I've already lost, so I better kill myself. It's just...
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of little things here that... Yeah, that just don't really feel like they add up. It feels rather than characters acting in the plot following, the plot has already dictated what the characters have to do. Which, I mean, you know, it's kind of how do you approach something, but this one, I think you said it right, it feels it left me feeling it was a bit contrived. Even that little bit, I'm a hero. Heroes don't let their enemies die. That would be as good as murder. And villains do? I shall remember that for next time!
Oh, I got it. You got it. Like, down pat. That voice there. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I guess that's the direction they wanted to take for this issue, so.
Yeah. And that is, you know, there is the argument that could be made of how much of it was meant to be an homage or be kind of a throwback to simpler golden age storytelling.
I get it.
Yeah.
Well, we like our fiction sophisticated, so there.
Exactly. Now bring me back my flying hero. And then we got the last few pages of the next evening six men gathered.
And we find out that what exactly the plot was all about. Right? So basically this guy, you know, when I was reading this, I had no idea what was going on. But it was basically that there was this intricate plot that involved a couple of men fighting over the talents of an artist. Right? And then basically to get hold of that person's talents, what's his name, contracted the mist to develop a kind of gas, right, to harm that one guy who was his rival, and because that rival only was a heavy brandy drinker. And that's why, to, you know, oust his rival out of the picture, he decided to get the mist to basically kill him off.
It's
that's the plot, I guess.
Yeah, it's, and I mean, the thing I kind of, it's a good enough story, it's a good enough plot. You know, it's supposed to be very pulpy and very detective-y. And I guess in a way it works, but we've complimented Robinson in the past, of being able to kind of almost seamlessly do exposition dumps into his stories. And I don't think that's the case here.
Mm.
You know, I mean, this is the kind of classic detective fiction whodunit reveal. Mm. But it just... I feel like half of these names, this is more than just like the casual name drop. This is the first time we're actually learning anything about any of these characters. Even when I read that, okay, the bad guy was apparently someone named Boyle, I could have flipped back to see, did Boyle show up here?
Mm.
But I'll be honest that I didn't really have enough interest in who Boyle was to even do the cursory flipping back to see if he was shown. It was like, okay, it was Boyle. Gotcha.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, no, I'm satisfied.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, not that we didn't like this issue, right?
No.
But I get it.
Yeah.
So it ends?
Hmm.
Okay, it ends with the six men plus Ted? Five men plus Ted, I think?
Yes.
Not sure. Yeah. Going down... Ted brings them to... the Mist's lair. And I think quite unintentionally he brought them into a trap of sorts where they were tempted to take something, which is the medal. Was it the medal?
The medal.
Yeah. I don't know if any of them actually took the medal, because...
It doesn't show that.
Yeah.
I was kind of expecting that as well. Like, are we going to see anyone, like, picking it up? Are we going to see him knocking it behind?
I mean, at least, a scene with somebody's hand on the medal would be nice.
Yeah, something.
Yeah.
And... So this little kind of wrap summation by the Shade, I think, also hurt the story for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because we get lots of names, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, when I kind of realized at some point that, like, wait a minute, a lot of these names are sounding familiar. Aren't these the names of the people who were... Yeah, I'm pretty sure these were the names. Yeah. And kind of, excited by my own cleverness. Oh, I'm so smart. And then kind of at the end of the issue, to have such a nice bow wrapped around it. Their death for five of them. More than 50 years later, true. But that kind of like, these guys died. Remember? Kind of.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's kind of like when there's an Easter egg and you notice it. Mm. And then if someone just stands by it and points and says, look! it took some of the shine off it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I know. Yeah. So, the story ends.
Yeah.
That's why. It's not, again, it's not, like, I don't think it was a bad issue.
No, I've
not yet met a bad issue in Starman, but it wasn't my favorite.
Yeah. Not every issue of Starman is perfect. I think... Yeah, this is our 19th, 18th issue we've read.
It's yeah. actually 19th, if you count zero.
Yeah, counting to zero, it's 19. And of those 19, I think this is maybe the second one that I've been less than effusive about. And I think this might be the first one where you've leaned a bit more towards the, it was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember the first one that you mentioned was one that I really liked. The one in the past, but it had a little bit more, I don't know, historical feel to it. The one, you know, Oscar Wilde and stuff like that. So yeah. I really like that one. Yeah. Yeah, but not so much this time in history.
And you know, but I think with both of these, they were trying something new. It definitely added some nice background information to characters. And even if it's not one of the better issues of Starman, it's still an entertaining read. You know,
agreed.
I didn't leave this going like, why did I read? I was like, you know, this wasn't as good as the others, but still worth my time. Where can they find you on the web?
That's a good question, because right now I'm only pretty much active on Twitter and then Instagram. My username is Quek, Q-U-E-K, channel, right? And you can find me there. Sometimes you can find me on YouTube. Sometimes I do live broadcasts on you now. It's fun. And also you can find me here with Brent.
Yay.
Comics League International.
Yay!
Yeah, where you can find Brent too, right?
Yes, definitely.
So what's your handle?
You can find me on Twitter at Dead Troubadour. You can find me on Facebook either at the Brent Thomas author page or the Comics League International page. You can also go to my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/Brent Thomas, and you know, if you want to throw a dollar or two my way, that is fantastic. Helps me keep on putting out this content. No pressure. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I think those are my and you know what, if you're enjoying this show, and I hope you are, why don't you go over to iTunes and take a moment just to rate and review the show. Help us spread the word with a review. And why don't you tell your friends, tell your comic shop buddies. Listen to this show. It's fun.
Yeah. All right. Nice to talk to you about comics today and the blue croissant.
You win.
What? Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye. Bye. Look us on. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it. Let the children use it, let all the children boogie.